It's 7:30 on this West Virginia morning. I'm Beth Voorhees. 28 years ago, Rabbi Victor Yerecki and his wife chose to live and serve in West Virginia.
There was such an excitement coming to West Virginia. I guess maybe people who live here understand that, and people that come for a visit appreciate that. There is just something magical about the people here.
The story coming up on this West Virginia morning. Tonight, Sylvia Matthews Burwell will receive the annual Spirit of the Mountains Award from the Youth Leadership Association at a reception to be held at the Governor's Mansion in Charleston. Spirit of the Mountains recognizes a person whose life reflects a commitment to helping others, hard work, education, and engaged citizenship. Burwell, a Hinton native, currently serves as the Director of the Office of Management and Budget in Washington, D.C. But in the early 1980s, she started her public service career as president of Hinton's Tri-High Y. In 2010, we featured Sylvia in our Inspiring West Virginians series. Here is an updated version of that profile from producer Gene Snediger.
She's a great American. She's a great West Virginian from the great town of Hinton, West Virginia in Summers County, a little town in the foothills, a beautiful new river that flows through. She's going to make just a great director of the Office of Management and Budget.
Senator Joe Manchin, speaking before the Senate Budget Committee in April 2013, 2 weeks before the Senate confirmed Sylvia Matthews Burwell as the new OMB director with a vote of 96-0. In the 11 previous years, Burwell was in the business of giving money away to some of the world's poorest people, most recently at the Walmart Foundation, and for 10 years before that with the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation in Seattle, which is where I met her for the inaugural series of Inspiring West Virginians.
We're in my office in Seattle, and our offices are located on Lake Union. And you can also see other parts of Seattle from here.
A city built around water. Seattle is the home of Amazon.com, numerous Boeing aircraft factories, the software giant Microsoft, and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, the world's largest charitable organization.
The Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation is founded on the idea that all lives have equal value. And from that, what we hope to do is ensure that all children have the opportunity to lead a healthy and productive life. And then we have chosen areas of focus because we believe that focus is the best way to achieve impact and results, that are places where we think there's a great need and that we think we can add tremendous value.
Sylvia Matthews Burwell is president of Global Development. They help small farmers increase productivity and provide access to financial services as well as safe, clean water for the poor.
2.5 billion people in the world do not have sanitation. And for people in West Virginia, where even when I was growing up, there were still certain developments in rural parts of the state, that's something I'm sure people understand why that is so important to both health and quality of life.
The budget for global development is $750 million a year. By any standard, it's a monumental task. But Sylvia's colleague, Alan Goldston, president of the foundation's work here in the United States, believes if anyone can do it, Sylvia can.
First, I would say she is one of the smartest people that I've ever met. And she's one of the most humble, ethical, integrity. She is a very values-driven individual, which I appreciate. Very focused, knows how to get results. You know, you match that unbelievable intellect with just real grounded values.
Those grounded values started here, in Hinton, West Virginia, on the banks of the New River in Summers County. The daughter of Greek parents and the younger of two sisters, Sylvia Matthews grew up in a close extended family of grandparents, aunts, uncles, cousins, and friends.
From my perspective, it was great growing up in Hinton in the early 70s and 80s. It is an incredible community, lots of different activities like the sports activities. My father and one of his best friends taught us the old game of tin can winker, and we would have great matches in the backyard, badminton in the backyard, croquet in the backyard, lots of neighbors and engagement with people there. What I think we sometimes lose in urban settings, sitting on the porch and having the conversation.
And according to her childhood friend, Christy Scott, Sylvia was a natural leader.
I told Sylvia in grade school that she would be our first female president. I'm still holding out for that. I think that might still come true.
Sylvia Matthews did spend 8 years in the Clinton administration, including a stint as Deputy White House Chief of Staff. But her proudest moment came when she was number two at the Office of Management and Budget, where she helped create three U.S. government budget surpluses.
We paid down the national debt. We started creating more space and room for long-term payments for entitlements, for Social Security, for Medicare. But it was the first time in an extremely long time that we as a nation did not spend more than we took in. And I'm very proud of being at the Office of Management and Budget when that happened.
It didn't last too long, though, that surplus.
Sadly. Sadly, the surplus did not last.
Despite Christie's childhood predictions, Sylvia Matthews Burwell has no current plans to run for president. She is, however, in charge of the nation's budget at a crucial time in our history. She's also someone who calls her childhood friends every week and has a message for youngsters growing up in West Virginia.
It is an incredible thing to be from our state and to be proud of it. I spout my 8th grade West Virginia history on a regular basis because I am so proud of being from a place where I think so many very important values of hard work, respect, sense of community are instilled.
Are you surprised you ended up here? A little girl from Hinton, West Virginia.
Yes, I think there have been many times that I have been surprised about where I am. And I can remember once I was with President Clinton and we were standing on top of a building in Moscow. It was the 50th anniversary of some of the transitions post-World War II. And beautiful fireworks are going off all around us. And President Clinton turns to me and he says, "Sylvia, we are a long way from Hope and Hinton."
For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Jean Snedeker.
Our focus on West Virginia's Jewish community continues this morning as we meet Rabbi Victor Yurecki. For almost 30 years, Rabbi Yurecki has led the congregation at the B'nai Jacob Synagogue in Charleston. Born in Argentina in 1961, his family moved to New York, then across the country to Portland, Oregon. Yurecki attended Yeshiva University in New York to study to be a rabbi, not, he says, from any spiritual calling, but because after his own bar mitzvah, he became fascinated by his religion. In 1986, he received an invitation to visit Charleston to interview for the position. He picks up the story from there.
I think I had 15 possible interviews from all over, from Phoenix to Florida to one in Canada. There were so many different locations. And fortunately for me, by luck, the first one was Charleston. And my wife and I came here in March of 1986. And we were just overwhelmed. It was a beautiful state. The people were absolutely amazing. And it was so different from the experiences in New York. I mean, the hustle and bustle, this was just so beautiful. And they offered us the position on Saturday night after the pretty much the Sabbath weekend. And we couldn't say fast enough. We were told not to. We were told you have to go to the other interviews and stuff. But on the flight back, my wife and I said, do we like it here? Yeah. Well, we're going to go ahead and say yes. So I called back Sunday night and said, if you still want me, I want to be here. And then I told the seminary, and they weren't too happy that I didn't want to go to the other interviews. But we were happy.
What did you expect? Did you have expectations? In 1986, you moved down to Charleston to lead the synagogue. What did you expect?
It's a good question. I was 24 years old. I don't know if I had expectations beyond 1987. I really didn't know. I mean, we just had gotten married 2 weeks prior, so it was just brand new. There was an excitement, though. There was such an excitement coming to West Virginia. I guess maybe people who live here understand that, and people that come for a visit appreciate that. There is just something magical about the people here, and even though we heard all the negative economic news, the depressed area, we didn't see that. We just saw so much potential. We just saw so many interconnections between different people of different denominations and faith. And coming from a very traditional background, that was both a little bit scary, but kind of exciting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my first few calls were coming from ministers welcoming me, and I thought that was strange. So we came with expectations that this was almost heaven.
How's the synagogue today, all these years later?
Fairly stable, economically very stable. The numbers are still a challenge. It's a challenge everywhere. We're holding our own, but you don't see a lot of young people coming to West Virginia, and there, as a result of the Jewish community. Mm-hmm. The Jewish community, not just in West Virginia, but throughout the country, is the oldest minority population. So that feeds into that difficulty, and then you add to the West Virginia narrative. That makes it very a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
The excitement is we're finding more and more people, both Jews who are rediscovering their faith at a later age. And we're also finding people that are not necessarily becoming Jewish, but feel the interconnectedness of the Jewish faith with their own traditions. And to the great credit of my synagogue, they've allowed me to kind of open up the doors of the synagogue. For example, this yesterday morning we had our Bible class, our Torah class. Our Torah class often has just as many people not of the Jewish faith than of the Jewish faith. So when you come and listen to the Torah class, it's exciting. It would not have been that way if we just kept ourselves very insular.
What is your relationship with other religions in the Charleston area?
It's been part of my growth. And I think, again, I would not have experienced this if I would have gone to the larger communities. And that's why I'm always feel very blessed by God that I'm in West Virginia. Churches have opened their doors. They want to discover Judaism. The mosque wants to develop relations with the Jewish community. What that has done is allowed us to find our commonalities, what we share, the same frustrations we have, the same issues. And it's been a wonderful dialogue and conversation. And what I've enjoyed about that is I've grown spiritually because of that, because I've approached God, I've approached religion through one narrative. I haven't weakened that narrative by embracing and looking at others. In fact, what it's done is it's enriching, it's, if you will, colorizing my religion and mm-hmm. broadening it and making it more special.
Mm-hmm.
The more I touch other religions, the closer I feel to God.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been my experience, and I can't get enough of it. I wish I could clone myself and go to different churches every Sunday and just sit in the pews and enjoy the services and then go at 1:30 to the mosque and then go to whatever different service I can, because with each one, I walk away with a greater appreciation of that denomination and that religion. But then I come to my own and I see the connectiveness that we all share with God.
Future plans for the synagogue, the congregation, and the community?
A lot more outreach. A lot more opening the doors to our congregation. Again, not necessarily for missionary purposes, though Judaism welcomes new adherents just like any other faith. But I think we just grow the more we share. I do many things that I enjoy. What I enjoy more than anything is my classes, because those classes are the great entry for these dialogues. Yesterday we had two people that have never been to our Torah class. Okay? They came to the class not knowing what to expect. I think they walked away with a great appreciation not only of Judaism, but more so, they took something home with them. But more so, their conversation brought something fresh to the Torah that I've seen for years. It's something I didn't think about it that way. And I couldn't have thought that way because my experiences are different than their experiences. My dream one day is, and I don't know if it's possible because our clergy are so, there's so many things that our clergy have to do, but I would love to have weekly clergy get-togethers, public forums where we each take our own faith traditions or more so our sacred text and share with each other. A minister will take a section from the gospel, and here's an imam, a rabbi, a Unitarian minister. Each of them, how do you look at this text? What does this text speak to you? And then the following week, the imam brings the Quran. We all can look at that. I can bring the Torah one week. And in a public setting, so other people can understand that we share so much, we take so much from each other, and we learn so much from each other.
Can that happen? Are you going to make that happen?
I'd like to. Mm-hmm. We have a working title.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it could be called Text in the City. I mean, we can do a whole bunch of different names for it. Text support. I mean, we could just do some great stuff. The joy of text. I mean, we could have some good stuff.
Rabbi Victor Yerecki, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You can see pictures of Rabbi Yarecki on our website, wvpublic.org, including photos of the rabbi's vast collection of comic books. He's an avid reader and collector. Well, this past weekend, the isolated Randolph County town of Pickens drew a couple thousand visitors to the annual Maple Syrup Festival. About 45 gallons of fresh West Virginia maple syrup were consumed in 2 days at the Pickens Pancake Breakfasts. Roxy Todd recorded this story from the breakfast at the American Legion Hall and the live performance by the Nightcrawlers inside the Pickens Opera House.
Debbie Morgan, and we're at the Maple Syrup Festival in Pickens, West Virginia. We usually serve around 2,000 pancake meals.
Debbie and her siblings have been some of the main organizers for the Maple Syrup Festival since it began in 1985. She was born and raised at Pickens, but like many of the event's organizers, she and her family moved away to Charleston and then to Buchanan to find work. In mid-March, dozens of people like Debbie returned to Pickens to help prepare and cook for the Maple Syrup Festival.
Back in the kitchen right now, there's people from Ohio, people from Pennsylvania, you know, all over, but it's people that come back to help. There are two syrup camps here, maple syrup camps. One is on the way to Elkins, and they sell their syrup here, but we actually buy the syrup for the breakfast from Mike Richter.
The festival coincides with what are usually the most ideal conditions for tapping maple trees, as freezing temperatures at night, followed by warmer days, allow for the best tasting and the best flowing maple sap. The liquid sap is then processed into rich, thick syrup, using a wood-burning sap evaporator. It can take as many as 50 gallons of liquid sap to reduce down to 1 gallon of syrup.
Go through probably anywhere from 40 to 50 gallons of syrup for the weekend.
Part of the reason Pickens is such an ideal area for sugar maples is because of the high altitudes and long winters here. It snowed on July 4th, 1892. The day the first train ran between Pickens and Buchanan. Many still remember riding the final passenger train that left Pickens in 1958. During the timber boom, Pickens had 1,500 people living in the town. Today, there are about 20. And anyone who works commutes to Elkins, Mill Creek, or Buchanan.
There's not many people live here anymore. I mean, there's hardly anyone. Everyone that has lived here comes back. I mean, so many people come back to help from all over the country, and they bring their kids with them. The money that's made from the festival, we use it back into the buildings.
This past year, the Pickens Historical Society replaced a roof at the Community Craft House. The project was funded with money raised at past maple syrup festivals. But more than the money, says Debbie, it's the people who return to Pickens each year that continue to make this festival what it's become.
On our 25th festival, an older gentleman from Spencer, West Virginia, he came in and he said, "Honey, I want to tell you, I've been here for 25 years, meaning he'd been here every year. And I said, why do you come back? And he said, I look forward to this all winter. Then that almost makes me teary-eyed. And, you know, I'm like, wow, we got to keep doing this.
Those who drive out to Pickens for the Maple Syrup Festival seem to because they love the place. But more than that, they love what the festival represents, survival. For many here, as it is throughout West Virginia, survival is synonymous with festival season.
And then tonight we have the ham and bean, and then we have the square dance, and that's kind of a wind down for us. And then we have to get up tomorrow morning and start all over again.
This story was produced by Roxy Todd of the Traveling 219 Project, a production of Allegheny Mountain Radio with support for the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the West Virginia Humanities Council, and AmeriCorps Vista. To learn more, go to traveling219.com. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. Our producer is Ben Aduccio. Our director is Teresa Wills. I'm Beth Voorhees.
Support for West Virginia Public Radio is provided by the Division of Rehabilitation Services, enabling and empowering workers with disabilities to meet business workforce needs. Visit wvdrs.org for employer services. Our series on the Jewish community is in tandem with The Story of the Jews by Simon Shama, March 25th and April 1st at 8 p.m. on West Virginia PBS. Funding is made possible by the Paul and Irma Milstein family, the Polonsky Foundation, the Pershing Square Foundation, the Joseph S. and Diane H. Steinberg Charitable Trust, James and Merrill Teish, Mortimer B. Zuckerman, the David Berg Foundation, Daniel and Joanna S. Rose, and the Lindbergh Foundation. Support is also provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and PBS. For more information, visit pbs.org/storyofthejews.